So we are holding on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis by the Mishnah at the bottom. Mishnah says, V'chein Beis Chabad, the same thing, similar as we talked about in previous Mishnayot about a two-story house where the whole thing collapsed, or the ceiling between them collapsed, etc. Similar kind of thing. Beis Chabad, if you have an olive press, Shuvoni Besela, which is built into the rock, it's hollowed out of a cave, basically. V'gina Achas Agaba, and on top of it is a garden. V'nifchas, and now the ceiling of this cave caved in. So now the guy up above doesn't have a place to plant his garden anymore. Again, how much it collapsed, we'll see in the Gemara. Harebala gina yerd v'zerei lamata. Then the one who owns the garden is entitled to go and start planting down below in the olive press area. Until the one who owns the olive press goes and puts up arches over there as a basis for a roof, which then the other guy can pile dirt and sod on top of that and have a place to plant his garden. Yeah.
And the garden caves in.
So the caves in, so therefore he needs a place for his dirt. So therefore he can go downstairs and until the guy puts back up arches, a vaulted roof, in order that now you have a basis for now putting dirt and sod and whatever on top of it to put his garden back together. Rashi says that we're talking about over here a case where you had the two people each owned their respective things. We're not talking about a renter, which means that according to Rashi, it comes out basically that this is sort of a continuation of the, so far we had four Mishnayos in our Perek. We had the first one that was talking about where it belonged to two separate people. We had the second one that talked about where it was a landlord and a tenant. The third one was again talking about two separate owners. And according to that, it would be this one is also talking about two separate owners. Tosfos discusses that a little bit. Is it possible that it can be made to work with a landlord and tenant as well? Okay. Tosfos just discusses it, so doesn't come. Tosfos concludes that Rashi is right. It is talking about two people own separate things. And the only question is why was the second Mishnah about a landlord and a tenant stuck in the middle over there if all the rest of them are talking about. So Tosfos just—it's a question. That's all. But there are Rishonim who learn that it may be talking about a landlord and a tenant as well. Truth is, as a matter of halacha, it's not really a great deal of difference either way. The same rule would apply. Actually, there are Mefoshim who point out there is a little bit of a nuance of difference. Namely, in the case where we had two floors and the ceiling in between them caved in, on the face of it, if we're talking about a landlord and a tenant over there. If we're talking about two separate owners, in a certain sense, the one downstairs has the ability to say, look, from my point of view, I don't need there to be a ceiling in between. There's a roof above my head. That's good enough for me. The fact that it caved in, that you can't live there, that's your problem. Why should I be responsible for dealing with it? Whereas over here, if there's no vaults over there, then he doesn't have a roof over his olive press at all. Every time it rains, it's going to get in and damage things. So therefore, there's a bit of a difference there. Okay. Continues the Mishnah with another case. A person has a wall or a tree that fell down into Rishos Rabim, v'hiziku, and they caused damage over there. Potter mil shalom, then he's potter from paying for it, because what could he do? It was an onus.
From the second floor?
No, never mind second floor. This is a new case. This is a new case. A person has a wall or a tree in his property.
From
Rishos HaYachid. It falls down into Rishos HaRabim and causes damage. So he's potter because it's an onus. It's not like he could have helped it. However, so what happened if Beis Din saw that the wall of the tree is shaky or leaning over too much or whatever, and they gave him a certain amount of time by which he has to chop down the tree or tear down the wall, and it fell down during that time, he's also potter because he relied on Beis Din. They told him he has 30 days, so therefore he's potter during that time. Doesn't matter, it's an onus on his part. Whereas if it was after the time, they told him 30 days, let's say, and he didn't do it within 30 days, and then it falls down, then he'll be chayev. Okay, yeah, there are mafarshim talk about, for example, I mean, if we know the wall was shaky to begin with, they'll give him much less than 30 days, or they'll tell him he has to tear it down right away. You know, that's different. We're talking about a normal wall or a normal tree, and all of a sudden a freak accident happens, and it falls down. Mafarshim also discussed, Tosis discusses it a little bit, other mafarshim talk about some more about the details. What are we talking about? Was the hezek caused while the tree was falling, or could we even be talking about after the tree fell, for example, and later on somebody trips over it? That would go back to an issue that we learned back in Baba Kama, where if an onus happened in the first place, are you responsible to clean up after yourself? We learned over there that the halacha is you're not. So therefore, this fits with that. Therefore, he's not responsible for the initial thing of the tree falling because it was an onus. Therefore, we can't necessarily hold him responsible for cleaning up afterwards, unless, of course, Beis Din gave him a time, and then in that case, he'd be potter in that case also. Because he can be masked as long as he's masked. Because since it was about onus in the first place, then we don't. Because it was an onus, and it's called masked nizaka. It's called that the initial takala, the initial thing, the initial stumbling block over there, didn't come about by his deliberate action. It came about by onus, for example, him tripping in the street. And therefore, he makir nezakav, we said, is potter. If he wants to be makir, we learned over there, the broken pieces, for example, then that's fine. Similarly over here, he can be makir, the broken chunks of the tree, and then he's potter. But that's the thing. If he had put it in a way where it falls down due to his negligence, then yes, there's no such thing. Then it would be considered a bar. But here, where it fell down not due to his negligence, but rather with an onus, then yes.
He's leaving it there. I mean, people can trip on it.
Doesn't matter. He has the ability to be masked here. Another case, Mishoya Kosla Samachu Dines Chaber, person has a wall near somebody else's garden, the Nafal, and the wall collapses. It collapses into the other guy's garden. So the owner of the garden tells him, clear away your stones. And the owner of the wall tells him, I don't want to. Higiyucha. You know what? They belong to you. I'll be mafkir them. You can keep the stone. You clear them away yourself. In Sherman Lay, we don't have to accept that argument from him. If the one who owns the garden wants to take him up on that, sure, but he's not obligated to. But what happens if the owner of the garden accepts that? You know what? Fine, that's a good idea. I'll clear away the stone and keep myself. Wait. But and after that, at some point, later on, the owner of the wall changes his mind and says, you know what? Never mind. I want my stones after all. Here, I'll give you your expenses that you paid so far for clearing away the stones, and let me have my stones back. And Sherman, we don't listen to him either. Once the guy started clearing away the stones, then he's koneh them for reasons which we'll see in the Gemara. The Tosfos Yom Tov, by the way, points out as a side thing, why do we mention specifically that it fell into a garden? He says, based on something that we're going to learn in the next couple of days, in the beginning of Baba Basra, that there's a difference between a wall between two chaseres and a wall next to a garden. A wall between two chaseres usually is built jointly by the owners of the two respective chaseres. Therefore, half the wall belongs to one, half to the other. We're not talking about over here. We're here talking about all the stones belong to one. That would typically be the case only by a wall that's standing next to a garden, where there's no obligation, as we'll learn there in Baba Master. We'll learn there's no obligation to build a wall over there, but if you want to, then you build it on your property, and therefore it all belongs to you.
You said with a wall next to the garden, he has to start clearing something.
If the owner of the garden starts clearing it, then at that point, he now owns those stones based on the other guy told him, you can keep them, and now if the other guy wants to change his mind and says, you know what, I'll pay you for your trouble in clearing away the stones, but let me have them back. And Sherman, we don't listen to him. The owner of the garden is still entitled to keep those stones.
Clearing, when he says, I need a sale?
Yeah, no. Mishakibalolov, suppose that the owner of the garden accepts, you know what, fine, I accept that. Yes, these stones were yours, but you're giving them away to me. Fine, I'll take them and I'll deal with the expenses of clearing them away. After he starts clearing them away, the owner of the wall says, you know what, I rethought about it and I decided actually I'd rather have my stones back. I'll pay you for how much you paid so far for haulage and whatever, and I want them back. Nope, ain't shaman love. You can change your mind to a large extent. As a matter of fact, actually, one of the Rishonim talks, I think it's Rabbeinu Yohanesson, talks about what if the other way around, what if the owner of the garden starts clearing them away and then changes his mind, does he have the ability to? He says maybe not, because he was moichel already, but yeah, many times he can, but in this case, once the other guy was koneh them, then no. Yeah. Okay. Another case. Person hires a worker to work with him on straw and stubble. So Rashi gives two examples. It can be There's lots of Chumash, actually, yeah. Now we're in Reira already, but yeah. So to work with him in Tevin or Cash, either Rashi says to collect them from his own property or to collect them from Hefker. Either way, he hired somebody to do that. Eventually, when he's finished, the worker says, give me my pay. And the balabas tells him, just take whatever you collected, all the straw and the stubble that you collected, keep that, and that'll be your schar. And Shemanloi, we don't have to listen to him. He has to pay him actual cash money, because Rashi says, now usually that shouldn't be the case. Usually we'd say shava kesef to kesef, as we learned back at the beginning of Bava Kamma. So why is it different over here? If he owes him, let's say, $10 for his work, and the straw and stubble is worth at least $10, what's the problem? Rashi says over here, because you have a mitzvah, bal tolin, as we learned in the last tariff, that you're not allowed to withhold his wages overnight, that means, Rashi says, it implies you're only able to give him what you made up with him originally. Again, obviously, if he wants to accept the straw, fine, but he's not obligated to, just because you decided so, and you would have to, in that case, give him cash money. There is some other interesting discussion about this. The Rashba says that's not the reason why. The Rashba says it's just as a practical matter. What's the reason behind why you have to pay the guy on time is because, as we learned in the previous parak, he's poor. Well, there's a mitzvah, I'll tell them, but what's the underlying idea, we said in the last parak, is the guy is poor, he's looking forward to it, he needs money for food, etc. What's going to happen? You give him a pile of straw. Now what? He can't buy food with that. He has to go sell that and get cash and use that to buy food. Meanwhile, the poor guy's going to go hungry. That's why you can't do it. Which leads the Mordechai brings then that Rameir Maharam Rutenberg had a dream where he saw, on the basis of this argument, that in that case, if you pay him with something for example, if it's not straw, what if it's wheat or barley, then that would be fine. And the Mordechai, then the Hagaris Maimonides also say, in that case, then that's what it is. On the other hand, the Shach disagrees with that on Shulchan Aruch. The Shach says, very nice, Maharam Rutenberg had a dream. We don't follow dreams in Halacha. Bottom line, you got to pay him cash money. And then Achronim talk about, that's the Halacha, like what the Shach says. However, some of the Achronim talk about, maybe even the Shach would agree, Mela, wheat and barley, you can't eat them as they are. But maybe if you want to pay him with a loaf of bread, with actual food that he can eat right there, maybe that would be acceptable even according to the Shach. But that's all according to the Rashba and Maharam Rutenberg and whatever Shitta. That wouldn't work according to Rashi, that basically it's a Gzeiras HaKasher. That you have to pay him like Seldon Tzorei, you have to pay him what you made up with him originally and not try to exchange it for something else. Okay. If he agreed to take something else, obviously we're not talking about that yet. Yeah. Okay. Onward. Misha Kibble Olav, what about if the worker is willing to accept that deal? Fine, I'll take the straw. But on the Halach Kharchavani Etelashli, now again the Balabas wants to renege and say, you know what, never mind, let me have back my straw, I'll pay you the value of it. Again, Ein Shomin Lo, we don't have to listen to him, and the worker is entitled to keep the straw. That's why we put these two cases together, because they're similar in that regard, where he first said one thing and then wants to change his mind. Okay.
You couldn't infer one from the other?
No, because we'll see in the Gemara, why not? We'll see in the Gemara. These are two different cases. Okay. So the first question, okay, so we have the first case of the Mishnah, we had the one where the roof of the olive press collapses, and now you have the garden above it is damaged. Nichasa, when we say that it caved in, how much of it has to be caved in for the din of our Mishnah to be triggered that he's now entitled to take up some space downstairs? Of surface area, yeah. It's a similar machlokas to we had previously. Rav Amar Berubo or Shmuel Amar Ba'Ava. Rav says it has to be most of the area of the garden. Shmuel says as long as it's an area of 4 tefachim. Just like we said over there in the case of the two-story house. Wait. The Gemara itself is going to ask that question. So Rav Amar Berubo, because he says Ava Ba'Ava, if it only caved in an area of 4 by 4 tefachim, no problem. Adam Zereh Chetzilamata V'Chetzilayla. A person can plant a garden where some of it is downstairs and some of it is upstairs, fine, he'll be entitled to an area equal to that caved-in area downstairs to plant, but the rest of his garden he has to keep upstairs. Shmuel says, no, even 4 tefachim is enough to trigger the din, because you can't expect a person to plant half above and half. There is actually, Mephoshim, talk about an interesting question. Maybe the din only would apply, maybe this concept would only apply if we're talking about a garden that actually has to be watered by hand. What about the kind of garden where if you're in an area that gets plenty of rainfall and you don't need to water it by hand, it gets rainfall, maybe then we wouldn't say that. Maybe even conceive. No, it's not because the roof caved in. The roof caved in, right? It's open.
Right.
So therefore, you could argue maybe in that case, Shmuel might agree that in that case, even if it's full tefachim, that's not enough to trigger the din of our Mishnah that you can plant your whole garden downstairs. Because fine, whatever of it is upstairs will be watered by the rain. Whatever of it is downstairs will also be watered by the rain. You can't take over the guy's whole olive branch for that.
With a lot of rain, the whole roof might collapse.
That's a whole other matter. I mean, eventually the guy downstairs is going to have to put it back up his roof. But we're talking about for the time being. Okay. So the Gemara says it's tricha. Now, your question. We needed to be told this machlokas of Rav and Shmuel in both cases, with our Mishnah as well as with the Mishnah that we had previously about the two-story house at the beginning of Kuf Tes Zayin Amud Beis. Because if you were only told about their machlokas when it comes to apartments, you would say b'hakama Shmuel. You would say over there Shmuel says that even four tefachim caved in is enough to say that you can abandon the upstairs apartment and move in downstairs and keep on living over there until the guy fixes the ceiling. Mishum d'layavidi inchi d'dayri kurtahacha. Because it's not usual for people to live partly here and partly there. It's not usual. We said over there, what would be the idea? That, for example, what? Rav would say you put your one piece of furniture that should have been there downstairs, and every time you want to use that piece of furniture, you'll go downstairs, and the rest of the time you'll be upstairs. Shmuel figures that's too much of a hassle for people to do. Avala inyan zuriya, but when it comes to planting, avidi inchi d'zari hachapurta v'hachapurta. You could say maybe not, because maybe people do sometimes plant a little bit here, a little bit there. Just because you have a little bit of the garden upstairs and a little bit downstairs, maybe it's not. The Eimah Mordele L'Rav, he would think maybe he agrees with Rav that only if most of it collapses. The Eitma B'hach, and if he only had it in connection with our Mishnah, you would say B'hach Kama Rav. For that reason, Rav might say over here that you need most of the garden to collapse in order for the din of our Mishnah to be triggered, that he can take over all of downstairs. Ava B'ha, but in that case over there about the apartments, Eimah Mordele L'Shmuel, maybe he'd agree with Shmuel that it's too much of a hassle to go up and down. Tzricha, and that's why we needed the machlokas in both places. The halacha is like Shmuel in both places, as he usually is in Dini Mamonos. So in both cases, as long as an area 4x4 tefachim collapsed, then you're entitled to start using the downstairs area. The Mishnah said nothing.
And he has to walk out if he wants to.
We said yesterday in the end that he's allowed to use the front door. He doesn't have to go upstairs and downstairs every time. However, we had a suffix. What about if there were two? What about if it was a three-story building? Does he have to go upstairs? The Mishnah said, "Nosnu loizman," that if based in, then now to the second case of the Mishnah, where your wall or your tree collapsed into Rosh Hasharabim, we said you're potter. However, if based in gave you a deadline by which to deal with it, and you didn't do anything by the deadline, then you're chayev. So v'kamazman based in, how much is that amount of time that based in gives you? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, 30 yom, 30 days. Tosfos points out, not just over here, but in general. In general, when we say, when we talk about, for example, that let's say, for example, we learned at the end of Bava Kama about the whole process of collecting a debt, where there's another example of it, that ordinarily, if a person doesn't have what to pay or whatever, Beis Din will give him up to 30 days before they start doing the next stage, putting him in Cherem or attaching property. We're not talking about the whole building collapse. We're talking about one wall.
No, but can Beis Din say, you know what? We're closing the building. You're not allowed to be there, like they do there. In
well, if you want to live in an unsafe building, fine, but you can't endanger the people of Rosh Hashanah. You have 30 days to tear down that wall. And if we're talking about that the wall is very dangerous, and you can see it's going to collapse in much less than 30 days, obviously, Beis Din is not going to give him 30 days in that case. They're going to tell him to get it dealt with right away. We're talking about under normal circumstances. It's not about to collapse, but it is starting to get again. Yes. That's another example, yeah. Tosfos does mention, now, for example, when we learned back in Bava Kama, again, that case about the person who dropped his jug and broke it, and afterwards where we said Rameir makes him chayev for any injuries that are caused by the broken pieces because he doesn't hold Machter Nezaka Fater, there we're not going to say that you have 30 days, because there it's an easy thing to clean it up in a matter of a couple of minutes. But something, a large thing like this, yeah, they ordinarily give you 30 days. Gemara tells us in Tainus, by the way, that Rav Huna used to make a practice of any time there was a windy or stormy day, he'd have a servant take him around in a carriage around the streets of the city to check, and if he saw any walls that looked like they were in danger of collapse. What?
It was so rich.
Yeah. He was
when he used to have buildings all over.
No, not he had buildings. He would go survey all the buildings in town that belong to anybody and see if there's any of them that are in danger of collapsing. Yeah. Then what he'd do is he'd knock on the door, and he'd have a servant knock on the door, tell the person, you should know, your wall is dangerous. And then the Gemara says it would depend. If the guy was rich enough to be able to afford the cost of tearing it down and rebuilding it, fine, then Rav Huna would tell him, go do it. If not, then Rav Huna would lay out the money for him to do it. That's the Gemara mentions over there. Rava says over there that there's a tremendous number of things of midas chassidus that Rav Huna did, which Rava says at the end of it there, after all those stories, I could do most of those things, except one thing he mentions that Rav Huna did that he couldn't, not this one, but a different one, yeah. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Mishal Yakos Lechola. We had the next case of the Mishnah where one person's wall collapsed into the other person's garden, and we said originally that he says if he wants to say to the owner of the garden, you keep the stones, then he doesn't have the right to do that. And if later on the guy starts clearing them away, then he doesn't have the right to say, I want them back after all. So Talmud Katani Sefer Helach Yitzyasecha. Now given that we're saying at the end of the mission, in the later continuation of this case, where he says after the guy started clearing it away, you know what? Here, take your expenses. I want my stone back. McLeod the Paninua skin. And obviously, we're talking about where the guy started clearing them away, because he's saying I'll repay you for your expenses. In which case, time of the Paninu, which implies that only if the guy actually started clearing them away, then he's kosher then. Halloy paninu loy, implying, but if the owner of the garden had not started clearing them away yet, then he wouldn't be kosher then. Even if, let's say, in other words, if the owner of the wall says to him, you keep the stone, and the owner of the gina says, fine, you know what, that sounds like a good idea. But he didn't actually start clearing them away yet, the owner of the wall would still have the ability to get the stones back. Now, why is that?
He comes and clears them itself.
If they weren't cleared yet, they're still sitting there in the garden. So the question is, am I? Why would we say that just because the owner of the garden didn't start clearing them, why do they not become his? Particularly Sadehu. Why shouldn't his field be koina for him, or his garden, as the case may be? We learned a few times in our Masechta that Rabbi Yitzchak Rav Chanina says that your chotzer can be koina for you even without your das. And Tosfos says we learned that that works even if you're not oimid b'tzad sadeh, even if you're not actually standing next to there, as long as it's a chotzer amishtameret, as long as it's a place that says, as long as it's a place that's well guarded.
Does he agree with that?
No, Rabbi Yosef Chanina is an Amora, but he can't disagree with our Mishnah. What we know, Rabbi Yosef Chanina's din is a well accepted din. So how do we make it work with our Mishnah?
Yeah.
The answer is kavin le'knuyele. Yes, but that only works where the original owner of it really meant to be makne to him. Aval hocha, but when it comes to over here, ishtemuti ho to kamishtamet le. It may very well be. Why is the owner of the wall telling him, you know what, you keep the stones? He may be trying to evade them. What he may figure is like this. It's too much of a hassle for me to go and clear away all these stones. So you know what? I'll tell the other guy that I want him to keep them and clear them away. He'll go and do it. And after he's done all the hard work, I'll come back and say, you know what, I'll pay you for your work, let me have back the stones. And that way I don't have the bother of clearing them. So since he's trying to do that as a subterfuge like that in the first place, there's no reason to assume that he meant to be machne to the other guy until once the other guy starts clearing them away, then he's actually kind of them by Meshitha or what have you. But no, he can't be kohen by Kenyan Chotzer because there wasn't a real das to be machne to him that way. There is some discussion among the Meparshim. Does this only apply maybe if he cleared them away while the other guy was there? Or maybe not. Maybe this works even if he cleared them away when the other guy was not there.
Right.
Yeah. You could look at it either way, yeah. Then we said another case. We had the next case, and the Mishnah was you hired a worker to work for you collecting straw or stubble, and you offered him that at the end to pay for what you were going to give him. Then you don't have the ability to do that unilaterally, but again, if you want to change your mind afterwards, then you also can't. So the Gemara says it's tzricha, to answer you again, your question, why do we need both cases in the Mishnah? Because if you were only told the first case about the collapsed wall, you would say, you know why, once he says, you know why, when he says, you be koinet, I'm giving it away as hefter to you. Why would we say it doesn't work? Mishum delasva agro gabe, because there was no business deal between them before. There was no amount that he owed him. So there's no, in other words, the owner of the garden on the face of it has a very strong claim to say, I don't want these. I don't want to accept your matana. I don't need your stone. And in fact, they're in my way. They're getting in the way of my garden. So that's a strong reason to say not. Aval hacha, but when it comes to a worker, the isle agra gabe, where after all the worker is owed a certain amount of money, a mashayman law, you would think, maybe the balabas's claim to say take the straw instead of your pay, maybe that should be accepted. Instead of, in lieu of what I owe you, you'll take the straw. The amri inchi, as in fact, like the expression that people say, mimorir shusach pari ifra, from someone who owes you money, take even bran, if all he's offering is bran, take it. Whatever he offers, take. Yeah. So therefore, you would think, because otherwise he may not get anything. Yeah. So therefore, you need to be told that it doesn't work in the case of the worker either. We learned it in Rav Kama.
We don't what this?
This these words, mimorir shusach pari ifra, yeah.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, if we were only told it in the second case of the worker, you would say hacha mishakibul olav ein shemin loy. You would say faket. The second part of the din, that once the worker was willing to accept that, fine, I'll take the straw in lieu of my payment, we would say ein shemin loy. Now, if the balabas wants to change his mind, we don't listen to him. Mishum de isle agra gabe, for the same logic, because after all, he owed the worker a certain amount, and therefore, once the guy was koina that straw, fine, you don't have the ability to take it back from him. But when it comes to the collapsed wall, you didn't owe the owner of the garden anything. So you would think maybe we should pay attention to his claim. Maybe he has a valid claim to say, I'll take it back. And that is why we need both cases. We said ein shomim lo. We said that in the case of the worker with the straw, we don't listen to him, though the worker is not obligated to accept that straw. So the question is, Vatanya Shaman Light, but we have a different brisa that says we do listen to him, that it is a valid claim. So what is it?
That's in the case, where?
Well, that's what we have to figure out. What's the difference? The Mishnah is telling us that you don't accept the owner's claim that the worker has the right to say, look, I was cutting the straw already, you don't have the right to take it back from me and then pay me for it instead, whereas the brisa says that the owner does have a valid claim. So what is it? So Rav Nachman answers, it's not a contradiction. One is talking about where he was doing work on his own property. The other is where he was doing work on somebody else's property. Namely, if it was on his own property, then we don't accept it. Once the guy was coined to the straw by picking it up, therefore, you, the boss, do not have the ability to the employer, do not have the ability to tell them, I want the straw back. But if it was in somebody else's property, it wasn't your straw to give him. He wasn't cutting it by picking it up because the owner of the property wasn't machne it to him. Therefore, you have the ability to trade him and tell him, I want the straw and I'll pay you.
Does he have to accept?
Wait, according to Rav Nachman, no. In that case, it doesn't matter whether he accepts or not. But Amalei Rabba L'Rav Nachman, Rava, it says on the side, so Rabba or Rava after Rav Nachman, B'shaloi my timer. Now, why are you telling me that when it was on your own property, then this does not work? D'Amalei Agra Allah, the reason why it doesn't work is because the worker has the ability to say, look, you're the one responsible for paying me. Well, B'shal Chaver Enami. And therefore, I'm not obligated to. In the first case, I'm not obligated to accept straw instead of money. And in the second case, once I was already coming to the straw, I'm not obligated to exchange it for money. Well, b'shal chaveiro nami schori olav. On the face of it, then, even in the case of somebody else's property, also he's the one responsible for paying. D'tanya, as we learn in a braisa, which we've learned before, hasoicher et apoyel lasis b'shaloi. If you hire a worker to work on your own property, and instead you ended up showing him to do somebody else's property. You have to pay the worker in full. And then you go and get reimbursed by that person the amount of hana. No, this is what we're talking about over here. So the point is, in other words, whether you're hiring him to collect straw from your own property or you hired him on behalf of somebody else, either way, you're the one responsible to pay him. So then why should there be any difference in the dinim in one case or the other? So Rav Nachman says, okay, you're right, we have to answer differently. One case is talking about where it was your own, where it was your own straw or stubble. The other one is talking about that it was Hefter.
Own
namely,
straw.
Your own straw. So then once
on
he was
property,
on your own property, yes. So I hire you to collect straw from my property, and I tell you afterwards, instead of paying you money, you keep the straw, and you say okay. And now afterwards I say, you know what, never mind, I'd like to undo that. Ain Sherman Loy. The Braisa that says Sherman Loy is talking about where I was telling you to collect where I hired you to collect straw from Hefter. Now why is that?
It's his own straw that was the owner of the land on the other guy's property.
But still, the other guy was paying it by being Kenyan Chotzer on the face of it.
So he doesn't have to pay him?
No, so he had to pay him, and then he gets reimbursed by the owner of the other property.
And he cannot change his mind?
We're saying that whatever Din would apply on his own property applies on somebody else's property. As long as you hired the worker, you're responsible for paying him. Yeah, so now, with Hefker is a different matter. Rashi says like this. We learned way back in the first parak that we learned a discussion about the concept of Magvir Mesil HaChaveri. If one person finds something and he picks it up intending to be machne it to somebody else, does that work? His picking it up is kone it on behalf of the other guy, or maybe not, it's kone it on behalf of himself. Now, Rav Nachman himself takes the view, Loikon HaChaveri, if Reuven picks up something intending that Shimon should acquire it, then Shimon does not acquire it. Therefore, it means, in other words, when...
He knows about it?
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The fact that Reuven picked it up does not constitute a kinyan on behalf of Shimon. Maybe Zachem Adam Shalei B'Fanav, but nevertheless, there was no kinyan over here. There was no kinyan over here.
There was no shlichus.
Never mind, even if there's shlichus, but still... Rav Nachman says over there, Loikon HaChaveri. Oh, we learned over there the reason why Rav Nachman says it, because it's called Tofus L'Bachoy V'Mokam Shechav L'Achayim, because you're preventing other people from asserting their claims there. This object is Hefker. In principle, anybody could have gotten it. You're saying, I want to pick it up to be Zoche in it on behalf of somebody else. You don't have the ability to do that, meaning that now other people are not going to be able to. You can't do that. So now, if we take that view, it means, in other words, if I hire you to collect straw of Hefker, it means that you're not really doing the work on my behalf. So therefore, you can't say that because it's Hefker, you weren't paying it on my behalf. So therefore, we can't really say that there's an issue of paying a worker on time. So therefore, I have the ability to change the terms as I wish. That's the case. So when you hire a person to work on somebody else's property, you can't say you be zoche, and it's not yours to be mezaka to him, and therefore unless he tells him that other guy is going to pay you, then you're responsible for paying him. But here he's not really working on your behalf at all because it's Hefker. Eis vei Rava lo Rav Nachman. However, Rava still asks Rav Nachman based on we learned in that sugya in the first parak. Mitzias poil la'atmo. The Mishnah says over there that whatever a worker finds belongs to him. But emesai is mantra amalei balabais nakish imiayoyim ador imiayoyim. When does that apply? If the balabas told him a specific job, for example, pull weeds with me today or dig in the ground with me today. So then, if he finds a messiah, then it's outside of his actual job. Therefore, he's koneh it for himself.
The worker.
But we said over there in the Braisa that if the balabas hires him generically just do malacha with me today, then mitziyas to the balabas, then whatever he finds belongs to the balabas, because then, to go back to what you were saying a second ago, then he is considered the yad of the balabas. When he voluntarily picks it up on behalf of somebody else, that doesn't work because tofus l'bachoy v'makom shechav l'achayim. But the same way as I have the ability to appoint a shliach to collect a debt from somebody else,
I can also appoint
a shliach to collect Hefker on my behalf, and that works. So in this case, if he hired him to collect straw, which is Hefker, then if he's doing it on his behalf, he is koneh it on his behalf. And again, why should he have the ability to change the terms after the fact and say, I want the straw, and I'll pay you for it? In fact, it actually points out over there, we actually had a case over there in that first tariff. We had a case where the Gemara talked about where you hire somebody to collect matzias. We had, for example, let's say a river overflowed, there's fish all over the place, and you hire somebody to collect as many of the fish as you can. This is a similar idea. You're hiring him, you're literally hiring him to collect matzias, collect as much straw from the hefker as you can.
And he finds something for himself.
We said that it all goes to the balabas, yeah. So in that case, the balabas owns the straw in the first place. He shouldn't have the ability, like the Mishnah said, to say instead, I'll pay you in the straw, for the reasons that we said before. And once they mutually agreed that he will pay him with the straw, he shouldn't have the ability to take it back because the worker was koneh.
Either one or the
other. Ela Amar Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman gives yet another answer. Loikasha, kan b'hagba, kan b'habasa. No. Loikasha meaning it's not a contradiction between the Mishnah, which says ain shomen loy, and the Braisa, which says shomen loy. Because we can be talking about, okay, there's a difference between the Mishnah and the Braisa. One is talking about, they're both talking about he's collecting from Hefker,
right.
But the Mishnah is talking about where he tells him to collect it by picking it up. So therefore, there is a source in it. So therefore, in other words, the owner, the worker is picking it up on behalf of the balabas. Therefore, the balabas is koneh. Every piece that the worker picks up, the balabas is koneh. Now, afterwards, again, the balabas does not have the right, after they agreed that he's going to pay him in money, to change his mind and pay him in straw, or vice versa. Once he agreed, I'll pay him in straw, to change his mind. Yeah, right. Kan b'habata, whereas the other one is talking about, suppose you hired a person, the b'raisa is talking about you hired him not to actually pick up the straw, but rather, let's say, you hired him to, habata literally means looking at. And there are rishonim that have a gears of chabata, which means throwing down. So it actually, in fact, gives both possibilities. One is you hired him to watch the straw, so he's not actually picking it up.
Right.
The other one is you hired him, let's say, so you have a bunch of... That's not enough to be koneh anything.
Right.
Therefore, the owner has the ability to say, look, nobody was koneh yet at this point. No kinyan has been done on it.
Right.
It's still Hefker.
Right.
You go ahead and be koneh. I'm not obligated to pay you in cash when that straw is still available for the taking. Nobody's made a kinyan on it yet, and therefore you can do that. That's what the Braisa says Sherman like. The other possibility it actually says is, let's say, for example, you had all this... We wouldn't have known that. We're going to see, no, because it's not so simple. There is a possibility that Habata Behefker is. Hagbah, obviously, but Habata is not so simple. That's what we're going to get into now. Anyway, it actually gives another explanation based on the Girsa Habata, which is, suppose, for example, you have a bunch of the straw, which is Hefker, on a second floor. You're hiring him to throw it out the window onto the ground. There's no Hagbah, he's not picking it up. Same idea, then. There's a bale of straw on the floor there. Push him out the window. Push him, you know. Yeah. So then there's no hagbah. Same idea. It amounts to the same thing. It's a 2D. Okay. So if we look at it that way, then the Mishnah is talking about there was an actual kinyan on the straw, and the Braisa is talking about there wasn't a kinyan. Which now, Omar Rabbah, so now Rabbah says in that connection, you should realize habata behefker kanoi. This question of whether this concept of whether you can be koneh hefker by looking at it is in fact a machlokes tanoim. The Tanan, namely, we learn in a Mishnah in Shkogim as follows. The Mishnah talks about over there all the different things that they would use the Trumas Halishka, the money that was collected for the Machta Shekel. They use it for, as we know, for all the operating expenses of the Beis Mikdash. So among other things, besides they used it to buy the Korbanos and all the other and all the other things they needed for the Ketores and so on and so forth, one of the things, among the things they would spend the Trumas HaLishka money on are the salaries of various people who do important work for the Beis Mikdash. One of them was, the Mishnah says over there, Shomrei Sfichei Shvi'is, people who are guarding Sfichim after growth of Shemitah. Not so much leftovers, but imagine, for example, let's say you have a wheat field.
Right.
Inevitably, when you harvest the grain, some kernels are going to fall out. The next year, those will sprout. Those are called svichim. Now, what happens? During Shemitah, you have to bring a korban ha'omer, the second day Pesach. You have to bring the shteil lechem, I'm sure, it's just like every other year. The problem is, everything is hefker. How do you know you're going to find ready to use barley at the time of the omer, ready to use wheat at the time of the shteil lechem? So what the Mishnah is saying is that what they would do is they would hire people to watch these Sfichim, and they would pay them out of the Trumas HaLishka. We're going to see what Rabbi Yossi says. On the other hand, right, that's where we're going to talk about Habakkuk. Tosfos, by the way, Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim talk about the question. We know the Torah tells us you're not allowed to guard Sfichim during the din is you're not allowed to guard Sfichim during Shemitah. They have to be, everything has to be Hefker. So what do you mean we're hiring workers over here? So there's various explanations that many different Rishonim give. One of them is maybe it's only Asa Midrabanan, and therefore maybe we don't apply it when it comes to Hekdesh, that you're not allowed to guard Sfichim. Or Tosfos themselves, earlier in the Masechta, talks about another possibility. When we say guard them, it doesn't literally mean like if anybody comes to take them or fight them off or whatever. All it means, primarily it means they would be guarding it against, let's say, wild animals coming and trampling it, which is fine. If people would come, all it is that, well, if people come, you're not allowed to prevent them from taking it, but you're allowed to tell them, you should be aware, this is reserved for the Beis Mikdash, they need it for the Omer or the Shteya Lechem. And the people on their own will understand, we need to stay away then. So not you're guarding it as preventing them from taking it by force, but rather you by moral suassion. You're explaining to them that what this is being used for, and that's fine. Okay. It's reserved for, yeah. Okay. So that's the Tanakam over there. Rabbi Yossi Omer. Rabbi Yossi says you don't need to pay them necessarily. If somebody wants to volunteer to watch these crops and be a shemachinam, that would also be fine. Amrulai, the Chachamim answered him, Asa Omer Kain, you're saying like that. Then the problem would be Ein Boin Mishal Tzibur. If you do that, then it's going to come out that this Omer, that these things, the Omer Shei Lechem, are not going to be brought from the property of the Tzibur, because this Yochid is going to have been coined to them from Hefker, and now he's giving them to the Beis Mikdash by guarding them, yeah.
So then we see
that's the Habatim, exactly. So we see that the Chachamim evidently are saying Habatim Behefter is coined, and Rabbi Yossi is saying that not.
Right.
Yeah. So therefore we see it's a Machlokas, my lab Bahakamuslagi. Isn't that then the underlying Machlokas? The Tanakama Stava Habatim Behefter Koni, the Tanakama holds that just looking at Hefker is enough to be coined, the Hivile Agrain, therefore only if they pay him for watching it, then yes, then it belongs to Hekdesh, because then he's guarding it on behalf of Hekdesh, and now it belongs to Hekdesh. And if not, then not. Whereas Rabbi Yossi might hold that Habata Behefker is not enough to be koneh. Therefore, so now when it comes the second day Pesach, the second night Pesach, and they come to harvest this crop of barley that's been guarded all this time it's been Hekdesh. At this point is when Hekdesh is being zochene. When the people come on behalf of Hekdesh and harvest it and put it in the basket. And they're meaning, in other words, all this time it's been Hekdesh. The guy's been standing there and washing it for the last 3 months. Doesn't matter. I bought the Hekdesh, they're not coming in. So then we have to ask if we understand the Mishnah that way. So what do we mean when the Chachamim answered of Yossi, what are you saying? That in that case it's going to come out that the Omer and the Shtei Lechem are not being brought from the Tzibur. Means, according to this explanation, it means the Chachamim would be saying same as follows. Midvarecha, midvareinu. If you combine together your opinion, where you're saying that you can have somebody watch it voluntarily for free, and you put together our opinion, that and our opinion, the Habata Behefka Kani, then that's not going to work. Ein Omer Shtei Lechem Boim Mishal Tzibur. Then it's not going to be brought to that Tzibur because it's going to belong to him all this time. And when it's now brought to...
Both opinions cannot work together.
No, in other words, the Chachamim are telling him the reason why we can't accept your opinion is because we hold Habata Behefka Kani. And therefore, if somebody is watching it voluntarily, it's going to come out that he was Koinet, and then that's no good. And therefore the Tzibur has not been Koinet, and therefore you have a problem. Okay, so that's a way of understanding the Mishnah.
And if someone from Hekdesh is watching them,
well, that's the thing. Someone from Hekdesh means he's being paid by Hekdesh. That's what we're talking about. That's what the Tanakhama of that Mishnah said. That we pay this guy, this watchman, out of Hekdesh funds,
right.
And that way he's working on behalf of Hekdesh. And that way, so that's the thing. According to the way we're understanding it so far, is like this. The Chachamim are saying because we're paying him, what it makes it's true that Habata Behefker Kani. But what he's doing is he's being koneh on behalf of Hekdesh.
And therefore it works.
Right. So therefore, it doesn't come from a yachad after all. As opposed to, if he did it for free, he would be koneh, and how is it ending up by Hekdesh?
As far as
Rabbi Yossi, I bought the Behefker, is not koneh anyway. So therefore, it doesn't matter whether he's being paid or not. Either way, it still remains Hekdesh until they actually come and harvest it, and therefore we're good. Amar Rava, however, Rava says loy. No, not necessarily. Do you have to understand the Mishnah that way? That this is the crux of the machloekas. Rather, the kula amah habata behefker kani. you could say that everybody agrees that just looking at Hefker is enough to be Kohen, eh? Even Rabbi Yossi. The underlying machlokas might be if somebody has, if there is something which originally came from a yachid and now is being given to the tzibur, does he wholeheartedly give it over?
Why is it important?
Well, why is it important? Because it has to come from the tzibur. Did Rabbanan
say
wholeheartedly? Because, in other words, Rashi says the reason why we would think, the reason why there'd be a chash is because maybe the person would rather. I'd rather have this course for myself. Look, you know, I was watching this stuff, and now the omer is being brought out of my personal body, and that's no good. It has to be from the tzibur.
You cancel
that. It would be that. It would be, yes, because, yeah. Which, and before we get into the question, actually, if you give something to Hektish, why does what you think about, why does that have any validity? And there's the various answers. One of them, indeed, is that by Hektish, maybe it is. Maybe by Hektish, you do need him to actually to have the Kavanah. Yeah, there's different other answers as well, anyway. So, did Rabbanan Savri Yahavinin like Agra? So, did Rabbanan hold like this? You have to pay him. Once you pay him, then he's an employee of the Tzibur. He's not being koined on his own. His habata, again, is not being koined for him personally. It's being koined for the tzibur. The Eloi, and if we don't hire him, then we have that problem. He may not give it over wholeheartedly. And then later on, when the Omer is brought, it didn't come in that tzibur. Rabbi Yossi.
So Yafi means we don't pay him?
No, Yafi means perfectly. It means wholeheartedly. Right. We're afraid he may not give it over wholeheartedly. He may still think I have some proprietary rights over this. Whereas Rabbi Yossi apparently is not concerned about that.
Nothing to do with Habata or not.
Well, in other words, everybody would agree that Habata the Hefker does work. Right. But Rabbi Yossi says, fine, he can be doing it for free. He can be kone for himself, gizuntahe. When it comes to giving it over to Hektish, we are sure that he's going to give it over 100%. Okay, well, Ma'at Omer, then we still have to understand, according to this explanation of Rava, what is the Ma'at Omer of the Mishnah mean? What is the Chachamim's objection to Rabbi Yossi? Again, what they're telling him is like this. If you combine together your opinion that you're saying we should watch that he can watch it for free, and our opinion that Shemela Yimsirim Yafa Yafa, then the Chashin and Shemela Yimsirim Yafa Yafa, we have that concern that he may not give it over 100% wholeheartedly. Then it's not going to come in a tzibur. But again, nothing to do with the machloikas on Habata the Hefker. We could say that everybody agrees Habata the Hefker does work.
It reaches the same conclusions.
Yeah, but in a different way. But a different way. Ikadamri.
So what's the conclusion?
Well, we're not finished yet. Ikadamri, yet another version of this discussion. Another version of what Rava says is the Kulama Botsbehaka Loikon. On the contrary, you might say Rava says that everybody agrees that nobody agrees that Habata Behefka works. Yeah. So rather, the machlokas over here might be, are we concerned about tough guys? Namely, are we...
The people who are willing to throw their hands on other people?
Bob is right. I mean, people with strong arms. In other words, people who may come and take this stuff by force.
Right.
Do we actually need it to be well known that this belongs to Hektish in order to keep those people away? Namely, like this, we know the Baal Yisroya are going to respect Hektish also. Even the Baal Yisroya are not going to mess around with Hektish. There's actually something in Psachim where it tells something similar, that there was the Gemara tells us over there, there were people, I think it was in Yericho, who had donated certain trees to Hektish. They had certain trees that were growing belonged to Hektish. The problem is these people had trees, which are growing new branches every year, and people would come and illegally chop branches off them. So the owners donated the trees to Hektish, and from now on, nobody will touch them because nobody wants to mess around with Hektish.
And they still respected that.
Yeah, so this is the similar idea over here. So, the Tanakama Sovet is a Kinu L'Rabbanon L'Mesev L'Abba Zuzi. So the Tanakama holds like this. The Chachamim made a Takana, you should pay this guy for Zuzim, which is the Gemara's typical term for a small amount of pay. Whatever, you pay him some nominal sum. This way, these Baal Yisroyas, these tough guys who otherwise might just go grab whatever is available, they will hear that it belongs to Hektish, and they will stay away from it because they don't want to mess with Hektish. They don't want to be involved with Me'ila. You pay the Shomer, the four Zuzim, and that way the Baal Yisroyas hear this is an official thing. This officially belongs to Hektish, and therefore they will know to stay away. So they don't want to get into details with Me'ila and whatever. Yeah. Rabbi Yisroyas. Yeah, Rabbi Yossi would hold that we don't have to make such a takana.
Again.
In which case, we have to ask Mata Omer, then what's the Mata Omer? If we're saying that either way the guy is not koneh, neither for himself nor for Hekdesh, then what's the Chachamim's problem with that? And what's the Mata Omer? The answer is Chachakam, really. What they're saying is like this. Midvarecha l'dvareinu. If you combine together your opinion and our opinion, namely that you're saying that you are saying that he can watch it for free, and we're saying that we're worried of that because we're worried about the Baal Yisroya, therefore we made a takana that he should be getting pay. The problem is if you don't give him his pay, ein varin mishal tzibur. Not the omer itself. Something else. You're going to have now four zuzim. If this guy, what is it? This guy is supposed to be getting four zuzim from the Trumas Halishka. From Hekdesh. He's being moichalit. What happens, effectively, what it is now you have four zuzim somewhere there in the Trumas Halishka that belongs to him. And therefore, whatever is bought with those four zuzim, whatever korban or what have you is bought with those four zuzim, is not going to be from the tzibur. Right. Belongs only to him. No good. Therefore, therefore, that's why they're saying you have to give him his pay. So far we have three different explanations in the Mishnah that it's a machloikas on a bot of a hefker, that it's a machloikas on Shimon Yim Sirim Yafa Yafa, or that it's the concern of Bali Zroya. V'chein ki also Robin. So also we find that when Robin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, this is buttressing the third one. When Robin came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Amar Rav Yechanan, he reported that Rav Yechanan said the same as Rav's last explanation. Choshen l'Baal Yisroel ikum b'nayim. The machlokes between them is, are we worried about the tough guys? And indeed that's how the maskana, that's machlokes. Therefore the maskana habata behefker is not kohen. So therefore, the maskana habata behefker is not kohen, and the only reason for why the chachamim say you have to pay the guy is because of Bali's race. And in fact, that's how the Rambam passed it in Hilchos Shlomim.
We'll keep this for tomorrow.
Yeah, I think we'll keep this for tomorrow.